Oh, you know what time it is. It's time to take it to the burn land. It's about to go down. Hope you're all ready.
Yeah,
let's go.
Come and roll with me to the burn land. Friends got to giving you the word, man. Any other BS is absurd, man. Sports talking, they give it to you firsthand. They can talk Terps, they can talk O's. Yeah, they both lit, that's how it goes. Baltimore squad, Ravens and Poe. Better tune in, here gonna show. Birdland, Birdland, Birdland. BS, Birdland, Birdland, Birdland. BS.
It's all about that BS, baby.
What's up, BSers?
What is up? It has been a long day.
It has.
Long week, really.
My anxiety's high. I got a headache. I know you got a migraine.
I had a
This show's going to be fucking great.
I had a migraine this morning. It's worn off.
Drew's cutting fingers off. Yeah. This is going to be an awesome show. It'll be great.
Yeah.
What's up, everybody? Fred, Scott, James, Andrew in the studio tonight. No Ryan. Ryan has left the Backstreet Boys. He's gone on a solo endeavor as he's home. Just finished up recording a solo episode called Ryan Rants of Shell and Tell. So if you're a Maryland Terps fan, we're not talking Shell and Tell tonight. We're not talking Terps tonight. Make sure you go to Shell and Tell's page. Check that out. Go to Apple, all your, you know, podcast.
Wherever the hell you listen, go listen.
All your podcast apps. That's right. Shell and Tell. Look for Ryan's Rants. We got a lot to talk about on this week's show. The rumor mills and coaching carousels continue to turn around the castle for the Ravens, man. A lot of people coming and a lot of people going.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see where this goes long-term. There's a lot of question marks, and we're going to get into some of the question marks that we feel are most pivotal right now.
Yep.
But this is going to be an interesting as hell offseason.
It is, for sure. Speaking of offseason, the Orioles making moves, signing the king. The king is in Baltimore.
About 10 years too late.
Yeah, is it 2007, 2014?
Yeah.
I don't know. They would have been very helpful back then.
Exactly.
And then who are we picking for Super Bowl 55? I mean, it's the lesser of both evils, I guess, at this point. Like, still to this minute.
We'll leave it at this. One of us still doesn't know.
That would be this guy. Me, right here. Still don't know. The three of you are going to have to sell me on who I should pick. So I will go last with my Super Bowl prediction, and whoever sells it best.
James is like wringing his hands over there.
James is excited for it. James is ready for it. I like it. But before we do too much, we do want to remind you, if you've ever been injured at work or in an auto accident and weren't sure who to call, 855-MD-CRASH, the Maryland personal injury attorneys that will have your back. If you find yourself in an unfortunate situation just like I have, give our team at MD-CRASH a call right away. We all know the cost of medical bills, lost wages, pain, suffering, all that stuff can add up and potentially put you in a bad financial place. Nobody wants that. So if you want a team that will handle your case, big or small, and just give you some peace of mind, save this number now. 855-MD-CRASH. It's 855-632-7274. Be sure to follow them on Facebook, Twitter, all the social media pages, because they're always doing gift cards to local restaurants, all kinds of fun giveaways. All right, Scott, so it's time for some flock talk. As we said, there's a lot of rumblings going on around the castle right now.
Yeah.
Some big pending free agent contracts that's kind of already putting Eric DaCosta and crew and the Ravens in position to make some really, really tough decisions soon.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest ones right off the bat, right, for this coming year is going to be, what are we going to do on the edge?
Right.
Right, because we know we've got Yannick, who I know you and Ryan weren't sold on what we saw out of him this year.
I think we had some high expectations, and I think he came in and did well as far as pressure. But again, everybody looks at how often did he get home, and he didn't. He didn't get home very often with us at all.
Yeah, but he was, I mean, yes, he was putting the pressure on. And that's what I look at is because one of the things that we've talked about and we've heard from multiple players now is that this is one of the most complex defensive schemes they've ever been a part of.
Right.
So I kind of give it a little bit of a pass. I don't know how to judge it because I don't know what it's like. I don't personally know what it's like to go from getting schemed this way where you're not doing shit in Jacksonville and you know you are the star and you're getting home, But then over here, are you just struggling to learn the scheme? Is it performance? Are you not getting home? Because this is still the same guy. He's just in a different place with a completely different scheme. So that's why I'm asking that. Like, I don't know that I can put my thumb on it and say, like, he didn't do what we wanted him to do.
Put his thumb on it, Drew. He's somebody that can actually put his thumb on it.
I purposely made that statement too soon.
Too soon.
But no, listen, the thing with Yannick, and I think part of it is scheme. I do believe that. I do think part of it was that. But I also think part of it is, listen, when you're a pass rusher, you can't be a one-trick pony. And I think a lot of the times I saw the same moves from Yannick over and over again. The teams were prepared for it. And I think he kind of burst onto the scene his first couple years and had great years in Jacksonville. I'm not trying to downplay the fact that Yannick, I think, could be a very good player. But the kind of contract that he's going to demand, the kind of contract that Matt Judon's going to demand. I know the rumors were that Matt Judon wants $20 million a year. He kind of debunked that rumor on social media himself.
But did he?
Right. He left it open. 20 mil? I'm listening. Right? So I just don't think with the limited salary cap that the Ravens have right now, which they finally announced, well, they haven't officially announced it, but the rumor is it's going to be $185 million. Right. So they're not going to have a ton of cap space.
No.
Are you going to invest all that cap space that you do have back into players that we already kind of know what we're going to get out of them? We already kind of know where we're going to end up at the end of the year. In my opinion, you got to start shifting that money over to the offensive side of the ball. You got to try something a little bit different. You got to protect Lamar. You got to put weapons around Lamar. And I think this week there was some interesting cryptic tweets. I don't even know if it was cryptic. It was pretty fucking blunt. As Orlando Brown, Zeus Jr., tweets, "I'm a left tackle," emphasis on left, which we kind of assumed this was what was going to happen. Like, he filled in for Ronnie Stanley, filled in seamlessly, did a very good job, and we kept talking about it all year long. All this is doing is building his market value up. So the Ravens are going to be in a situation here where they're going to have to make a decision with this guy.
This is Scott's fault.
This is Scott's fault?
Yeah, you remember? He's like, oh, maybe take the hometown.
No. I said.
Because of his dad, blah, blah, blah.
What I said.
That,
no,
he
I.
He wants left tackle money now.
No. Right. What I said, if you go back and you listen, I'm going to correct you. I said people were saying he should and thinking he should. I questioned, is this a kid who's ready to take the step and say, I want to make my own mark. I want to do me. And I think we just found out our answer. He wants to do him.
He wants his money.
But he wants money.
But he wants to get paid to be a left tackle. He doesn't like. Maybe he doesn't like right tackle. But there's something about left tackle that he is set on.
Yeah, it's money. It's 100% money. It has nothing to do with anything else. Orlando Brown Jr. realizes that this is his biggest opportunity to cash in on his biggest contract, right? This is going into his second deal. His market's never been higher because, again, he proved that he's got not only the ability to play Pro Bowl right tackle, but now he's a Pro Bowl left tackle, right? Mm. Filled in great for Ronnie Stanley. So his market value's high. And we all know he's a Baltimore-born kid. You know, his father played here. We all know that he's got the local ties. And I know people think, well, maybe he'll take a hometown discount because he wants to be here. No. Like, he's a smart enough guy. He's a business guy. He's going to want his money. Easy money, right? He's the one that started that whole thing in the end zone, right? This was kind of the plan, I think, once they decided they were going to put him at left tackle. He thought, well, shit, I'm going to cash in, take full advantage. And he's done a good job at doing that.
So here's the question, because I know you're obviously paying Ronnie Stanley right now, right? Because you gave him the contract there. My question becomes, do you go ahead and pay Orlando to move to left tackle? And I say this because we don't know. It's always a question mark. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't want to predict it's going to happen, but I am a realist and I'm trying to look at the full situation. We don't know what a healthy Ronnie Stanley coming off this injury is going to look like.
Right.
So why not go ahead and shore it up and say that left side is set? Ronnie, I know we already paid you. Let's put you on the right side. They can be interchangeable.
I don't think so. I think
there's
you're
nothing in the contract.
I think you're taking his tweet of "I'm a left tackle" wrong. So I don't think Orlando Brown has a problem playing right tackle. He wants to get paid like a left tackle because he can. He proved that he can play left tackle and at a high level. So his thing is, if I'm going to be in Baltimore and you want me to play right tackle, cool. We can do that. Let's cross that bridge. But you're going to pay me like a left tackle because that's the only reason I'm going to stay here. Because if not, I will go get paid to be a left tackle elsewhere because there's going to be 15 other teams that are going to be willing to pay me left tackle money and I'll go there and play.
How about, so I don't know the answer to this. Left-handed QBs in the league right now. Tua?
In that. Sorry to cut you off. I was just thinking the same thing.
Like, because right. If he's proven he can do it both way, both sides. Somebody who's got a left-handed quarterback, he's had more snaps at right tackle than he has at left.
Right.
You know he can do both. So if you've got a left tackle, you could be really getting a value here in Orlando Brown because he can go wherever you need him. If your left-handed quarterback isn't the guy of the future, you just need somebody to protect him for now, and then he can flip over to the left tackle and protect your future quarterback that's right-handed, then I think it makes sense, which then begs the question, are we looking and assessing potential offers for Orlando Brown?
I think that'll be something that Eric DaCosta and crew will look at. I think there's a lot of different things here that the Ravens can do.
Or assess, or even, by the way, Ronnie Stanley, right?
Right.
You could always assess a trade for Ronnie Stanley.
Right. No, that's true. There's a lot of things that they could do. They could let him play out his last year. He's got one more year under his contract this upcoming year.
Right.
They could let it play out and let him go. That would be the dumbest opportunity because then you're not getting any value for him at his peak value, right? So if your mindset is we can't afford or we don't want to pay two tackles, our left tackle and our right tackle, top tier left tackle type money. We just can't afford to do that.
Right.
Well, then yeah, then you start looking at avenues as to, all right, who can I trade him to? Who wants 1 year of him under his rookie contract? Good value that you can get a couple of draft picks back. That's what Eric DaCosta and that's what the Ravens have done historically is they're always looking to build through the draft and get more picks. Go ahead, James.
Real quick, if they franchise him, does it go by what position he plays that year or he says I'm left tackle?
So, yeah, it would go by the position that he played. So he played the majority of his games this past year, I believe, at left tackle. Right, because I don't remember exactly what week Ronnie Stanley went down. I'll have to look into it. That's a good question.
I think that was like week 12 that Ronnie went down.
Before that,
was it before that? All right, so we'll
10 or 12.
That'll be something that we bring up next week because I didn't look into that to see when he started. That's actually that's a good bet. So that is an option. Franchise tag, right? That's another option. You only get one franchise tag a year. Is it going to be on a tackle? You know, it's not going to be this year. It would be next year because he's right. Got one more year left under his contract. So it won't affect the team this year. But I think you have to look at, as terrible as it is, you have to look at the potential at trading him. Because, again, we all know and we all saw this year how important it is for this offense to have a solid offensive line around Lamar Jackson, right? How much did this team change offensively, especially passing? You lose your all-pro in Marshall Yanda to retirement, right?
Right.
And then Ronnie Stanley goes down. And then we have nothing but snapping issues in the interior, right? So the one, two spots you knew you were good at were your bookends, your left tackle and your right tackle. Like, you knew you were good with those going into this past year. Do you want to lose that when you've already got issues on the interior offensive line, unless you've got an automatic replacement in the wings to fill in for Orlando Brown, if you trade him, I don't know if that makes sense.
Unless you're picking somebody up in the draft, right? That would be the only other way, but that's a leap of faith, right? And that's,
it is.
I think you, if we're saying that the time for the Ravens is now, right? You need to get the value out of these rookie contracts while you can in play. I understand we historically have always looked and said we want more. We want these draft picks. We want all these draft picks. But at some point, you have to be willing to say, I don't need those draft picks if it means I can win right here, right now with these guys.
Right.
Right. There's a connection between Lamar and Orlando. right? We know there's connection between Lamar and Ronnie, but if you're putting bookend tackles there, I know you don't want to pay him in the future. I don't know that I'm trading him this year.
Well, the thing is, he's a free agent after this year. So it's you either trade him or you tag and trade him next year.
I think I think where you see where you're at midway through the season.
Like you said, the draft, especially with offensive linemen, with the draft it in total is always a bit of a gamble, right? You never know exactly what you're going to get. Now, I will say, from everything that the experts are saying, this is a deep draft for tackles. Like, you can find good tackles even late in the first round, even if you didn't get a pick that's above the Ravens 27 overall right now. If you think you can, you know, get maybe a couple of twos or a late first and a two for Ronnie Stanley, this might be the year to do that, because they do, a lot of the experts are saying you can get good depth and get good potential starters at tackle in the second and even third round in this draft, because it's a very, very deep tackle class.
Yeah.
Again, there's no guarantees with it. But the last thing that you want to do is see this guy walk, sign with another team next year, and not get anything for him. That's not the Ravens. The Ravens have never been that kind of team. They're always looking to cash in, at least get some sort of value. Or they pay and keep their guys. And that's the other option is, all right, if Eric DaCosta thinks offensive line is priority number one, protecting Lamar, the only way you do that is by not paying those edge rushers that we talked about.
Right.
So the decision that you're making is, we're not paying Judon. We're not paying Yannick. We are going to pay...
You're robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Yeah, we're going to pay Orlando Brown market value for what we feel he would get as a left tackle and keeping him as our right tackle. But that's it. That's your options. Yeah. You don't let him walk. You trade him and get value, or you sign him. Those, in my opinion, are your only two options.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I think there's a lot of question marks that are coming out. And I know Steve even chimed in and was saying, you know, Gus Edwards is another guy that's going to be due a contract.
Exactly.
Right? So, you know, you got to figure out what you're going to do with them. So all these offensive side of the ball contracts, Lamar with an extension next year, if you can get it done this year, Andrews, obviously we're going to talk about it here in a minute, but they just did the piece with Boyle. So they're obviously wanting to invest on the offensive side of the ball. And I think that's what makes the most sense. And with that, right. So one guy that we've talked about, we both agreed he was underutilized in this offense. And that's Dez Bryant.
Underutilized isn't the word. They didn't use him at all. Yeah. Like, at all. It was basically
I feel like that he was mainly there as a decoy, but he wasn't even a decoy.
It was a show and dance. Yeah. Like, they just didn't use him like you thought they would. Then he leaks these practice videos where he looks like he's dominating in the red zone. It's like, where was that? Where was the play calling with that? Where were the opportunities for that? It was very disheartening. But now Dez Bryant is an interesting piece because of the lack of opportunities here. Did he put enough on film for another team to be interested in him? Like, nobody was interested in Dez Bryant for a few years, right? So did he do enough to do? I don't think he did enough to build his value for another team to sign him to any kind of a long-term deal. They're going to sign him to maybe a one-year deal, and it's going to be a vet minimum kind of deal. So if the Ravens are ready to say, you know what, we're bringing Orlando Brown back, we're signing him to a long-term deal, that deal in itself is going to eat up a ton of cap space.
Oh, yeah.
And when they do that...
Unless you can restructure it.
Right. When they do that, basically kiss the whole Allen Robinson thoughts and the Kenny Golladay thoughts goodbye, because they're just not going to have the cap space to do it. So you got to find value at wide receiver, because really, at that point, some of the other tier two wide receivers, tier three wide receivers, they don't do anything for me. Those are guys that we already had, tier two, tier three. So if I'm going to sign somebody to a vet minimum type of deal, I'm going to sign a guy that I saw some potential in. I saw potential in. Maybe they didn't. I saw potential in. I think he'd be a good fit. And somebody that knows the system and somebody who's a physical guy, I give Dez Bryant another look.
I mean, I agree with you. I think they should. Whether they will or not, you know, we've seen historically this team, when you go against the team and, you know, you're the putting out the videos, there's usually repercussions.
Right.
This is an offseason where they don't have to do anything with them. You don't have this guy sitting here. This guy could go wherever the hell he wants.
Right.
So you can do one of two things. You either pay him, keep him back, and actually utilize him. But I don't know that Dez is going to sign. I think we saw the frustration, the fact that he released the footage saying, here's what I did. And I know that you're saying that you don't think he's done enough. I think there's some team out there that would be willing to pay vet minimum, just like we are, and say, those videos look good. He was going against, you know, a top-tier defense.
Yeah, in fairness, it was their
It was the second and third string guys. I get that. Yeah. But it's still a top-tier defense in the league. That's my Siri just going off.
Wait, what is she talking about? Bitch.
It's a top-tier defense in the league. And that's...
There was an Android comment coming.
Yeah, I know. I'm letting it go. How's your thumb? How's your thumb, Drew? Can you?
I'm out.
Hey, Drew, look for the little thing that goes on your mic because I can hear you breathing, the little cap on the end.
Yeah, James got it. There you go. All right. So, but yeah, no, I think there somebody will garner enough interest from seeing those videos, seeing him still be able to high point a ball, beat some guys. You know, that's going to be somebody's going to like that value that they're seeing out of him and knowing he's going to be a locker room guy. He's changed. He clearly changed the emotion that we saw last year, you know, or this past season when he gets that touchdown and goes up to Harbaugh, which is kind of why I'm surprised about the whole release thing and, you know, underutilization. But I think he recognizes it. He recognized, like, you guys were giving me a chance, and every time you gave me a chance, I delivered.
Right.
It's that hot hand situation that we keep asking, why are we not going with the hot hand at running back or the hot hand at wide receiver? We're just continuing not to do it, and it's a problem. Does he see that, and that's his way of voicing it? Maybe.
Yeah. Well, one of the positions that I think we saw a step back from this past season was the tight end position.
Yep.
And I think we saw that as individuals, and we saw that as a group. Obviously, we talked about it the offseason, the loss of Hayden Hurst. How was that going to affect, you know, the 2 and 3 tight end situations? Right. It had a big impact. Mark Andrews didn't have the same impact this year that he had the year prior. And then Nick Boyle goes down with the injury, so they're stuck with one tight end and whoever the fuck they can find off the street to fill in, right?
Right.
Bunch of nobodies that they brought in. So the Ravens did shore up their tight end number 2 as they ended up signing Nick Boyle to a 2-year extension for $13 million. What was your reaction to that deal? Were you happy that they brought him back?
Yes, happy that they brought him back. Again, I keep saying it when it comes down to injuries. I don't like when you're paying a guy and you haven't seen him coming back from recovering from an injury.
Right.
I don't like that. It's just me personally. I wouldn't pay for... I understand we're in a league where you pay for what you've seen.
Yeah.
Right? We're not in a league that we pay for what we want to get. Right? As weird as that sounds, but if we were in a league like that, Nick Boyle wouldn't have gotten paid. Right. Because I have no clue what a healthy Nick Boyle coming off this injury looks like. Just like, I can use history and say, look, history has shown he's done well, but we don't have the history of him coming off an injury like this.
No, you're right. And that's the risk you take in sports in general, right? But you also pay your medical professionals, your doctors to give you, you know, the peace of mind, the clearance to know that this guy's knee is in a good spot and that he's going to come back at 100% or he's going to come back at 90%. Yeah. That's part of that evaluation process. So I thought this was important. I mean, Nick Boyle was paid because he was one of the best blocking tight ends in the league, if not the best blocking tight end in the league. Well, this year put him into a more of a pass catching situation than he's been in the past. And he did pretty well in that situation, considering the tight end situation as a whole. So I think this was a good signing. You know, $13 million comes out to $6.5 million a year. Doesn't really hit the cap that hard. I think he's a worker. You know what I mean? He is a guy that he's not afraid to do the dirty work. He doesn't complain about anything. You got to have that kind of guy. I still think that the Ravens need to bring in another pass-catching threat at the tight end position
yes.
so they can get back to those 2 and 3 tight end formations. whether that's through the draft, whether that's through free agency, somebody that they can find on a budget deal. They need another true pass catching tight end.
Undrafted, we're the kings of undrafted guys, right? You know, this could be another year that, you know, we saw, I forget who it was last season, undrafted. He was on the bubble, right, when the season hit. It wasn't Ben Breedson, because I know he's on the line, but it was something with a B. I forget what it was.
Kid out of Oregon.
Yes. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do. I think they tried. They recognized late in the season, right, that three tight end set was what helped them.
Yeah.
Because they go and they're getting the Luke Wilsons and the Tomlinsons, and it never panned out.
Right.
I think this is the year that we're either going to draft a tight end in the actual draft, or we're going to find one in the undrafted, you know, free agency. That's where it's going to come from.
There are some good pass catching tight ends in this draft. I would not be surprised. I know the kid out of Florida, the Pitts kid, yeah. I think his last name is. Everybody wants this kid. He's going to go well before the Ravens get the pick at 27. He's not going to be an option. If he is, 100%, I'm on board with the Ravens.
Best man on the board.
Yeah,
take him, yeah.
Yeah, best player available. If he's there at 27,
and he's a need. Pick and he's him. A need at that point.
100%. But staying with the tight ends and staying with the coaching carousel that we talked about last week, guys are just getting plucked left and right, and it sounds like the Ravens might lose another assistant tight end coach, Andy Bischoff, expected to join David Culley's team up in Houston,
yeah.
or down in Houston. So that'll be another loss yet again on this coaching staff.
That's a big hit to this tight end room. This tight end room we've heard is, you know, these guys are tight-knit, right?
Right.
They care about each other. They talk with each other. They're open with each other. Losing a guy like Andy Bischoff that's been in that room for the past several years and helping these guys develop, helping Mark Andrews, you know, take it to the next level, in all reality, this year, up until the injury, he had Nick Boyle looking great.
Yeah.
Right? He turned Nick Boyle into a pass-catching tight end.
A pass-catching threat.
But that wasn't something we've seen.
Yeah.
Prior to that. I attribute that to Andy Bischoff working with him and working on the hands and working on the route running, and it worked.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's gonna be huge, especially if you do go get somebody in the draft. Who's gonna replace him yet?
Well, the Ravens have a lot of vacancies to fill, a lot of positions to fill.
I have my vote.
Who's that?
Dennis Pitta.
Yeah, I could see that.
Why not bring him back? He is very knowledgeable. He is football smart. There's a reason he's doing commentary right now.
If you're going to bring him back, you got to bring back his best friend and Joe Flacco. You got to have them both back, right? It's Joe Flacco going to be his quarterback coach, Lamar Jackson's quarterback coach. Oh, my God. Joe Flacco, the quarterback whisperer. Yeah.
Oh, my.
Hilarious.
The passing game coordinator.
Yeah, passing game coordinator. I love it. That's funny. But I think one of the more underrated losses on the coaching staff, I think that upset me the most, was former linebacker Zach Orr. He's actually leaving as a linebacker coach for Urban Meyer down with Jacksonville now. That was a loss. I mean, Zach Orr was an undrafted guy that came in and defeated the odds, came in and fought for a position on the roster, yeah. got a position on the roster, fought for starting time, got starting time, and then played his ass off into a Pro Bowl-type player.
Right.
And then, obviously, they found some medical issues with him and his neck and whatnot, so it cut his career short. But he's been on the coaching staff now for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
He's only 28 years old. I think he could have been a potential candidate for a future defensive coordinator with this team because he resonates with the players. The players love him. He's a locker room guy. I wish him the best, and I hope he does big things down there with Urban Meyer. It's just, I think this one was a hard one for me to see go.
I mean, well, Urban Meyer wants him for a reason because he sees what this kid can do. Yeah. You know, former player, the level that he's at and the impact that he has on the players, like you were talking about, it's somebody that they can relate to. This guy is around their age.
Yeah.
You don't see many coaches in that position. And the ones that are usually wind up being pretty damn good.
Right.
Right. So that's one thing I think is going to be hurting on this linebacker core. This is a guy that also worked with Patrick Queen this past year on things. So, yeah. And helping him develop and take that next level. So don't know. We'll see what he does down in Jacksonville. Definitely wishing the best of luck.
Joe says, I hate Urban Meyer. And this is coming from an Ohio State fan. I hate Urban Meyer, too. Was never a fan of his. Didn't like the fact that we picked him as a coach. Hated him his days down in Florida. Couldn't stand him. So I'm with you, Joe, on that one. Good.
One guy that's a coach that's young and can understand with the players is Byron Leftwich.
Byron Leftwich.
He could probably get a head coach job or something.
I think he's a guy that should be out there and considered for a head coaching job. He's done big things already. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. Listen, so I got to get your guys' opinion on a couple of rumors that have been going around the last couple of weeks, right? So the rumor number one was guy in the opening image that we talked about. The Ravens bring in former Raven Anthony Weaver to coach their defensive line, right?
Yeah.
So he came from Houston, came from the Texans. And a certain player that he coached gave Weaver a nice little shout out on Twitter. Now, he didn't say he was a good coach. He said, he's a great guy. He got a couple snaps in him. Blah, blah, blah. He said all these good things. And that's J.J. Watt. Well, of course, Twitter takes that and runs with it. And, oh, well, there's connections with Anthony Weaver. Da, da, da. J.J. Watt in Baltimore just makes sense. Well, yeah, I mean, it'd be a great fit. Does it work in the cap? Probably not, especially with all these decisions that we've already talked about the Ravens are going to have to make and they're going to make. But would you like to see J.J. Watt in Baltimore?
Yes and no.
Okay.
I think J.J. Watt is... He is a dominant force, has been. But what it's going to take to get him, it's not worth it to me. We're right back in the situation of Matt Judon and Yannick.
Yeah.
He's not been, I mean, look at, everybody talks about Watson and you guys give me shit because I think he can't finish. But here's another guy that him and that defensive front last year looked like shit. They got beat left and right. He wasn't getting to the quarterback like he used to. You were not seeing him get the bats like he used to, right? And batting it down at the line. Part of that's guys, you know, adjusting when they're playing him. But then you need to make adjustments yourself.
Right.
And I don't know that we've seen that. Is he still impactful? Yes. But I think there's more that can be done for less.
I would love to see J.J. Watt in Baltimore. If we could just pay fucking anybody and we didn't have a salary cap, of course, I'd love to see J.J. Watt in Baltimore. Now, is he J.J. Watt, you know, the defensive player of the year that he's won multiple times now? No. He's on the back half of his career. He's in the latter half of his career. But he's one of those, like, typical Raven players you see where, you know, they bring in the veteran. What has he got left for another year or two? Give him a low deal, but sell him on the potential of actually winning. Come from a shit situation. Calais Campbell. Come from a shit situation and come to a contender. Same thing. J.J. Watt. Come from a shit situation and come to a contender. So I can see the parallels. I understand why people are talking about it. But, Drew, am I wrong? I just don't think that this is realistic.
Yeah, I think it's not realistic. I mean, it's cool to think of the name being here and all that. But then, like you said, like, I mean, is Houston going to pay, like, the whole salary? But then if something like that happens, usually you're like, maybe they would be asking for, like, a two or something.
Right.
And if you ask for way too much, and I think this isn't a year that you can mess with the draft with a little less picks than normal. And the salary cap situation. I mean, yeah, J.J. Watt, J.J. Watt. He's one of the best defensive players that ever played the game.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he also – I mean, he's a Hall of Famer. I'm not going to say that his resume comes into question, but you're also talking about a handful of the last couple of years where he's just
– he's had injuries.
Injury at, like, week 8, and he's gone.
Exactly.
Or even earlier. So, yeah, I think the name value is great, and it's a good sign. But like you're saying, like, what you're paying him to bring him in, I mean, at that point, then you just might as well give the money to the younger guys like Judon that you already have in-house.
Right. Now, if we could steal TJ from the Steelers somehow, take
perfect.
One away from our division rival and bring him in a younger J.J. Watt, yeah, I'm good with that. That'll never happen.
It'll never happen,
I'm good with it. But so, yeah, there was that rumor. And then another rumor that's been going around because – the cap situation, and because we probably can't go out and afford to pay the likes of an Allen Robinson and some of these big name wide receivers, there's been a lot of people drawing parallels to AJ Green, another guy coming from a shit situation, didn't end well in Cincinnati. Like, you could see him chirping on the sideline that if you're not going to play me, let me go. Right. Like, so AJ Green's days in Cincinnati more than likely are over. Do we want to see AJ Green here in Baltimore?
I mean, I wouldn't mind it because he's a guy that is historically, outside of this year, historically has killed us with the Bengals, right? Not to the point that he's beating us, but he's beating our guys on a regular basis. So can't beat him, join him kind of thing. I wouldn't mind taking him, especially if it's on a value deal. You know he wants to get out. He would love to come to a contender and a division rival and shove it to the Bengals, especially because the Bengals are putting their chips. Obviously, as long as Burrow comes back healthy, their chips are going to start to be all in on him. They want to turn him into the next big thing there.
And they've got good wide receivers there.
Yeah, and so I think...
outside of AJ Green.
I think you really could, you could make this work. It's going to cost you, but I think you can get a... I don't want to say a little bit of a discount, but I think... because he didn't show a lot last year, you're going to have teams not willing to pay as much, and therefore, we may be able to squeeze out some type of deal and get that guy in there, but this is a guy, again, is he going to fall into that situation that he wants the ball? This is a team that they're clearly a run first offense.
I don't know. I haven't seen anything out of AJ Green in half a decade. I haven't seen anything out of him in a long time. The threat of him here has been over for a few years. Last year, we see anything out of him.
But think about who he was doing it with.
No, I get that. But, I mean, my point is, I don't know how much A.J. Green's got left in the tank. I think his average yard per catch or per attempt last year was like 5 yards. It was something stupid like that. I think we need somebody that's a little bit of a different receiver. I think we need somebody that's a little bit more physical. If this was, 2014, 2013. Yeah, I'd be all over AJ Green. But at this point, I don't know how much he's got left in the tank. To your point, if he's willing to take like a vet minimum type of deal to be in a better situation, great. Yeah, you take a flyer on it because it's not going to cost you anything. But I do think that there's somebody out there that will pay him more than I think the Ravens should go on him.
Okay. How about you guys? What do you think?
Nah, he can retire in my mind. His times are in the rear view. I mean, at that point, if you're going to bring in a guy like him, you might as well just bring Dez back.
Or AB, as Nick wants to say. AB wants him.
Nick's starting to convince me.
AB in Baltimore. He's been wanting him for a year and a half now.
Oh, my goodness.
So we'll see.
I just want them to roll with what we got this year. If we don't have anybody 6'4" or bigger, I don't want to go after. I don't want no AB. We got too many short guys.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Speaking of guys on Super Bowl teams right now, another rumor that's been floated around is the Ravens having interest in Shaquille Barrett to shore up that defensive side, right?
That's going to cost a pretty penny. I'd love to have Shaq Barrett here. 100% I'd love to have him here. That is not going to be cheap.
No, it's not.
And that's the problem. I don't know how the Ravens.
It's going to be. Would it be cheaper than Julian Argonik?
Yes, but again, it's one of those contracts that if you pay him, you're not going to keep Yannick, you're not going to keep Judon, and you're not going to keep Orlando Brown.
But if you can pay him and sure up, I mean, Orlando, in all reality, you could get away with not doing anything with him till next year if you're going to wait.
If that's the route that they choose to go, their plan is let's sign Shaq Barrett, get him in here, we'll franchise tag Orlando Brown next year when the cap number goes back up because fans are back in the stands and the cap goes up to where it's supposed to be. Yeah. Hopefully fans are in the stands. Hopefully I'm in my fucking seats. if that's the plan, I could see that happening. But if the Ravens are thinking about working out the extension deal with Orlando Brown right now for this year, I just don't see it happening. Can't see it fitting.
I think it's interesting, especially because he would cost you less than the two guys that you have now. And if you could get him on a lower deal than either one of them and pick somebody up in the draft, which I think it was Craig that said he thinks that we're going to pick up a defensive end in the draft.
Right.
So if that's the case and that is something you do, you might be able to afford that swing.
Right. That's very true.
So stay tuned, by the way, guys, because when we get past the social media shout out, we're going to get into our predictions on the Super Bowl.
All right, James, it's time for a social media shout out. Who's been out there in the chat room? Who's chatting it up and saying what?
our good crews of Joe, Nick, Chuck, Dominic, Jamal, Alex, Joe, Sean, Sherry, Jesse, Ryan, Jonathan, Travis, and Craig Zero. So the good old staff is back in.
Good. I love it. So speaking of Craig Zero, Craig Zero sent us a question on Twitter, which if you guys want us to answer you know, some of your questions on the show, make sure you send them to our social media, tag us on Facebook, send it to our social media, all of our Twitter accounts, the Birdland BS page, wherever, and we'll bring it up on the show. So Craig Zero asks, from the 2020 season, Ravens season, other than the Cleveland game, which to me was the last Cleveland game,
right,
was a top five regular season game of all time for the Ravens.
Oh,
was,
no doubt.
It was
no doubt.
An absolute epic game. Other than the Cleveland game, which regular season game was your favorite to watch this season?
So I think there might be one or two.
Nah, give me one because don't steal my other
one. I'm not.
Jesus Christ, Scott. One.
There might be one or two. But I think for me, it comes down to the first Browns versus Ravens game.
So the opening game.
The opening game. Because there was so much hype around the Browns, and they did turn around, which sets up that second game of why it was so epic.
Right.
But we just shit all over them. It was 38-6.
Yeah.
Like, it was nice. Everybody was like, the Browns are going to give the Ravens a run on things this year. And then it opens it up. And they wound up doing that, but it opens it up, and we kind of go, yeah, you can take it and shove it. We're still the best offense.
Okay.
In this division, right? That's the way that I look at it. But I have to say that one would be my pick. What would be yours?
I guess for me, it's actually going to be a loss. And it was the second Steelers game of the year. And the reason I say that is because that game, we had COVID ran rampant. We had our backup quarterback in there. Like, there was no reason for us to be in that game. So there's multiple reasons that I like that game is because we were in that game. And we should have won that game when it all comes down to it. We should have won that game with all of our backups, essentially. And then what that did, to Chase Young's point, was basically give the league the blueprint on what to do with the Steelers. Yeah. And the Steelers season absolutely fell apart, to shit after that game. Everybody was beaten on the Steelers. So for me, I think that was probably my favorite game. Even though it was a loss, I think it was my favorite game. It's a turning point. We went on a run after that. We ran the last five off the table after that.
It looks like the chat room is going off with that same game. Ryan, Travis, and Joe all chiming in saying that Steelers game is there.
Yeah, I know James. That was his pick, too. So
yeah, Drew, are you in that game, too, or what are you thinking?
Yeah, that was pretty cool, but the Colts game to me because...
That was a good one. That was
it showed that they could make adjustments because it was like the offense was sputtering. And the defense was holding true, like even without when you remember Calais got hurt right away and Judon got suspended, thrown out of the game like pretty quick.
Yeah.
And then but the defense in that second half didn't allow a point.
Nope.
And then they ran the ball down their throat like you expect the Ravens to do.
They played Raven football.
And they played Raven football. And that, granted, then they had that little low dip after losing to the Titans and then the game you guys loved. But yeah, that to me was probably the best game outside of the Monday.
Do you see
game.
This crap from Joe Carlozzo?
If we played McSorley sooner, we would have won. You know what? I'm not going to discredit that or blow it off as him just being a Penn State fan.
I am.
I'm not. Nah. Maybe McSorley would have been the trick that game in the Pittsburgh game. Yeah,
I agree with him.
Yeah. RG3 was done before he ever came back in the league. RG3's purpose here was to be a mentor towards Lamar. It was to never play competitive football again or be an option for the Ravens to fill in. So I would have rather seen.
All right. Dominic says, personally, by the way, he said the Philly game for him. But that game was way closer.
That was terrible. There's no reason.
That game was way closer than it needed to be.
Yeah, why was that? Dominic, you got to explain yourself on that one. So make sure you're paying attention to the chat room there, James. I got to hear his reasoning for that one. Man.
All right. Let's jump into playoff predictions.
All right. Sounds good.
So we talked a few weeks ago about these two teams and how they got here.
Playoff predictions meaning Super Bowl predictions.
Yeah, it's
at this point.
It's what it's labeled on our thing.
To this second right now, I still don't know who I'm picking. I have no idea. That's why I didn't text you to give you my pick or anything yet. I still don't know. So the three of you have gotten your picks in. I need the three of you to sell me on who I should be picking in this game. So I'll let you guys start on this. Scott, how do you see this game shaking out?
So I look at this game, I think there's too many high points for one team over the other.
Okay.
And it's Tom Brady.
Okay. Okay.
Look, okay. I look at this game. It's in Tampa. I don't know if you've heard that the mayor of Tampa says if they win the game, they're gonna legally change the name of Tampa to Tampa.
Wow.
That you should stop being the mayor of that city.
Jesus Christ.
But
that's such a Brady thing to happen.
It is. But I think the other, you know, some of the things on the field, right? Their defense is clicking right now.
Yeah.
On so many levels. You know, they're reading quarterbacks well. They're getting to the quarterback. They're finishing and driving home on the quarterback, which I get it's Mahomes. But Mahomes and Josh Allen play a little similar game when they played previously. When they've played previously. Didn't they play earlier
this year? Did you just
year?
Compare Josh Allen to Patrick Mahomes?
They have a similar style.
Backup.
What?
Yeah, Deshaun Watson's a backup quarterback.
I'm fucking with you. I don't like the comparison one bit, but I'm fucking with you. All right, keep going. You're not doing a great job of selling me, but keep going.
No, I'm gonna expand on that for a second because you guys all seem to think I'm crazy.
I do. It's okay.
Is Patrick Mahomes still the same quarterback without Tyreek Hill?
Yes.
Really? Without the fastest man in the league, yeah. He's still the same quarterback.
Patrick Mahomes, I think.
So what you're saying is Patrick Mahomes could have won in Buffalo with what was there.
Yep, Cole Hardman.
100%.
Prior to Stephon Diggs?
With Stephon Diggs and with Gabriel.
No.
Josh Allen didn't win without Stephon Diggs.
Josh Allen got farther than anybody even fucking thought the Bills would get this year.
Josh Allen didn't complete 60% of his passes without Stephon Diggs.
Again, he has that similar. My whole point is their style is similar. They have weapons around him. Apparently, I'm the one that's crazy. Whatever. All right, so Dominic chimed in and said, I would say the Philly game because for once they showed the potential of being a great offense at a moment of almost losing. The team didn't fold and found a way to win.
Okay, all right, I can see that spin on it. That game should have never been that close, but I like your spin on it, Dominic. Okay, I get it.
Anyway, back to my prediction. I think it's the Bucks. Flustered. I am, because you guys, like, apparently I'm not conveying what I'm trying to say in the fact that you guys both think that they're not a similar style quarterback. Both quarterbacks have good arms. Both quarterbacks are mobile and can throw on the run. They've proven it. And both quarterbacks proven when they have the weapons, they can perform.
Okay.
That's the comparison.
Okay, if that's what you're comparing, then okay.
It's not your pick that you're picking.
All right, yeah, so let's...
Anyway.
Where are we going with
anyway,
this?
The Bucs is who I'm picking here. I think they're just clicking on so many cylinders that offensively they've been doing well. I mean, who in this season, before the beginning of the season, knew who the hell Scotty Miller was?
Right.
Nobody.
I mean, I knew who he was from a fantasy perspective, but yeah.
But that's about it. So to me, what he's doing is what Tom Brady has kind of unfortunately always done, and he's been able to win with these other guys. I'm not the biggest fan of it, but he's been able to do it. He has weapons. They're clicking on all cylinders on offense. They're clicking on all cylinders on defense. I know I'm not convincing you, but the Bucs win 38-35 to me.
All right, Drew.
I kind of actually want him to go.
You want? All right, yeah, James.
He had a lot of reactions during that.
All right, James.
Take.
Give it to me.
I thought you would go because you were.
I don't have much to bring to the table. I won't
James
lie.
Is on the spot.
I'm going to just sell you like this. It's Tom fucking Brady. That's number one. That's the number one big thing. You have three of the best wide receivers in the game. You have a good tight end. You have a good offensive line. You have Jensen that doesn't take any shit. Your defensive line for the Bucs is blowing up. Pierre Paul with like three fingers is running through people that are 400 pounds, which I don't get. Their defensive backs are playing up and playing hard. Scotty Miller, AB, who'd go get the fucking ball? Like, you never know.
Isn't AB a little banged up, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but he's going to play because it's the Super Bowl. Right. It's in Tampa, you know.
I got you.
Probably Tom Brady and him are massaging each other right now. So
interesting.
They're going to just kick some ass and take names because on the other side, it's right now it's just Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and Kelce. And if you shut them down, they're done. That's all I have
That's
to say.
That's a big ask, though. Shutting them down, it's a big ask.
Yeah, but Tampa's D is – lights out, and their linebackers are playing hard right now.
I agree with that 100%. So, who do you got?
I got the Bucks winning this, and I think this is going to be Tom Brady's last close Super Bowl score. So, I have it 37-32. like I said, you can't leave the goat out. He's collecting rings.
All right. Drew?
I was going to get the score out of the way.
Okay.
It'd be Chiefs 30 to 28.
Okay, so you do go with the Chiefs. All right, so finally somebody's on the other side of it.
I'm also probably the biggest Patrick Mahomes mark.
I've heard two cases for why the Bucs are going to win. Now sell me on why the Chiefs are going to win.
This ain't going to be anything educated or none of this shit. You want to see Tom Brady win another goddamn ring? I don't.
Hell no.
You want to see Gronk win another goddamn ring?
Nope.
I don't.
Okay.
You want to see the guy that was a goddamn clown for 2 years get redemption after he's, you know, abusive towards women and cops and won't pay workers and
fuck
AB?
Fuck no.
You want to see AB in Baltimore?
Fuck no.
Yeah, fuck no. Let's see what else. Do you like Bruce Arians?
I think he's an overrated coach.
Thank you. Then do you want him to win a ring?
No, I don't.
All right, case closed.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like fucking, it.
Not all this little. Who do you want?
Like, you're seriously about to pick the Chiefs off that argument?
I like
you're
it.
High as fuck.
I liked it.
He said nothing about
so who do you got? You got the Chiefs winning. What was the score?
You wonder why? Okay. I'll go to the Chiefs then. All right. You say that you can't shut. If you shut down, you're going to shut down both Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
And Mecole Hardman's going to do jack shit.
Who's blocking?
Doesn't matter. He'll just run around and kill time.
Nah.
You also got to remember you got a nice pass-catching threat coming out of the backfield in Clyde Edwards-Helaire as well. He's been back.
When you think of, we're going to shut down this running back, all of a sudden a guy like Williams comes out of nowhere and he could be fucking 80 yards and two touchdowns.
He should have been the MVP of the Super Bowl last year.
All right. So you got that shit. Now, if you're going to tell me that Tom Brady is going to take chances like he did in the Green Bay game and throw two or three picks late in third and fourth quarter, and Patrick Mahomes isn't going to make him pay.
Okay.
Hey,
I'm
going to just close you out on why you should pick the Bucs. Real All simple. Right. Yeah, 32 teams in the NFL. Tom Brady played against the legend, Drew Brees. Went to Green Bay against
the MVP.
The MVP, Rodgers. I can't stand Tom fucking Brady, but he finds a way to fucking win, and it's going to be more of, I think the defense is going to have an impact on this game, but Tom Brady went through all of them. There's no reason why they can't win.
Bruce Arians finds a way to get out-coached by the other coach.
No,
who happens to be one of the best of all time.
No.
We're going to see. You're going to see what
Bruce,
Tom Brady does.
We heard who's coaching this team.
Yeah, Tom
Bruce
Brady.
Arians has said he lets Tom sit back and coach. And I understand what you're saying, but everything that's there, and I think that's a great argument to kind of end out the argument, and then you can make your decision. But yeah, Tom Brady went up against what we all agree are some of the best quarterbacks, are the undeniable best quarterback in the league this past year was Aaron Rodgers. In the regular season, and for the most of the postseason, the guy that beat him, you don't think can beat Patrick Mahomes? I get he's the defending. I get it's a storyline.
I can't stand Tom Brady, but
all right.
Who's
so
the most complete team,
man. I'm gonna give you two predictions. You asked for God. One. I'm gonna give you two predictions. All right. So
if the Bucks win this, if the Chiefs win this,
no.
If I eat my pizza tomorrow and I don't get sick.
So here's my prediction. I think Tom Brady and the Bucks are absolutely stacked. I think they're hitting their stride. Like I know we talked about it in the preseason. Like when Tom Brady ultimately signed with the Bucks, we're like, oh my God, this makes the Bucks potentially Super Bowl like contenders. Da da da. And I was kind of timid on that. I was like, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to happen. Like he's got a lot of learning to do down there. They got to learn a lot of learning around him. Like it's a new coaching staff. Like there's a lot of personalities involved. I just don't know how it's going to work. And the first 8 weeks of the season, it kind of played true to that. He didn't look great. They didn't look great. They won some games. They just didn't look great. But this last half of the year, they really, really started to hit their stride and really started playing well. And you started to see Mike Evans come out of his shell a little bit and playing really, really good. Tom Brady just doesn't – like if Chris Godwin, he's got drop issues at times. he doesn't let that discourage him. He still goes to Chris Godwin right after a drop. And he, like, that's what a leader does, right? So there's a lot of reasons to like Tom Brady and the way that this offense is clicking. And to your point, I think their defense is playing lights out football, and they're good at all three levels. I think they're good on the defensive line, linebackers, and the secondary. They've got, in my opinion, one of the best young safeties in the game, a rookie, kid out of Minnesota, Winfield. He's one of the young upcoming safeties. They're a good team, to your point, a very complete team. There's my case with the Bucs. The Chiefs have the best player in football, Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes right now is the best player in football. Did Aaron Rodgers statistically have a better year? Yes.
Did Patrick Mahomes play like it this year?
Patrick Mahomes is the best player in football.
I don't think he played better.
And I think with the weapons that he has around him, to Drew's point, you can try to stop Tyreek Hill. You could try to stop Travis Kelce. This team is built around speed. They've got speed everywhere. And as good as this secondary is, I just don't think that their defense will do enough to be able to contain them. This is going to come down to a very, very tight game in the fourth quarter. And I think this is going to be a 32-30 kind of game.
Okay.
But I think Patrick Mahomes does enough to win his second consecutive Super Bowl. Chiefs win Super Bowl 55. Prediction one. Prediction two. Simple. Tom Brady and the Bucs come back and win Super Bowl 56 next year because they're playing at a whole nother level. They get a whole offseason to plan in this new system. They're used to each other. I think they'll add a couple of pieces to be even that much better next year. I think the Bucs win Super Bowl 56. But this coming weekend, it'll be the Chiefs, 32-30.
I forgot to tell you, Leonard Fournette's looking like a fucking monster right now.
Yeah. He is.
Like, I thought at the beginning of the year when he got traded, I'm like, oh, he's going to take over the carries. But then Donald Jones, outworked him. But then lately, starting against Washington, he was running motherfuckers over. And he wants that ring, too. And they're just getting better each week. Like, the NFL had enough time to put Tom Brady out in the beginning of the year to not even be in the playoff prediction. And they're just riding on the horses. And no, I don't think no one's going to beat Tampa Bay this year.
It's going to be the Chiefs. The Chiefs, Pat Mahomes.
The Chiefs have been so up and down on scoring all year long. Or from a team that last year was scoring what seemed to be 40 points a game, is on most games getting to barely 30 points a game.
They didn't have a trouble scoring against the Buffalo Bills two weeks ago.
But then the week before that, they had their struggles. Who was it they went against?
They went against the Browns, but if anything with the
But 22-17?
But if anything, that shows the resiliency of a team that it doesn't matter how close the game is. They're not going
to
choke it away.
They find a way to win.
That's what Tom Brady does every day.
He's going against a team that's fucking doing that.
They don't have anybody. They're all injured. They lost their best linebacker, Gay, this week with surgery. They have no offensive line. Who's going to protect Patrick Mahomes? It scrambled around for a little bit. They're playing in their own stadium. The Bucs aren't losing this game.
All right.
I'm telling you.
We'll see what happens.
I can't stand Brady.
I can't stand Brady either. I can't stand the fucking Chiefs. I don't want to pick any of these teams, but if you're holding a gun to my head, I think the Chiefs win 32-30. All right, Scott, it's time for this week's Liquor Stop Brew of the Week.
And this is on you this week, buddy. Oh, okay. I'm not having any. My head has been pounding all day long, so I'm not drinking tonight. So this is on you. I think it's out of Abita Brewing Company.
Abita Brewing's Purple Haze Raspberry Lager. I'm going to be brutally honest on this one. I have liked everything that we've had on this show that's been raspberry. I love raspberry, apparently. Not a fan on this one. It's a little...
It's a different style when it's a lager.
It doesn't have much raspberry taste to me, and it's a little... A little stale tasting to me. And I don't think it's a stale beer. I don't think that, like, he gave us old beer. The date on it's good. No. But it has almost a stale taste to it. I'm not a huge fan of this. I mean, it's descriptions. It's clouds of real raspberry swirl in this tart and tantalizing lager brewed with Pilsner and wheat malts along with Vanguard hops. Let the scent of berries in this hazy purple brew take your taste buds on a harmonious journey inspired by the good vibes and free spirit of New Orleans. I've never been in New Orleans, but if this is what it tastes like in New Orleans, I don't ever want to go.
So
this is,
I think Drew Brees' season right here.
Oh, okay.
And it's only 4.2 alcohol value.
Yeah, so I think part of it is you know the raspberry beers that we've had prior. Been a lot of milkshake IPAs, so they're made so that you get that flavor. When you put flavor in a lager, there's very few lagers out there that have flavor, and it usually needs to be like a darker, like a chocolate or something like that, to where it's like a stout, like
right,
like the Hershey's lager, right? That's Hershey's Yingling lager. Dark stuff works with it. The fruity stuff doesn't always work with it. You know, I was interested to try it just because it was something that was, again, it was raspberry.
And you know what? It's what's kind of disappointing. It's 4.2%. Usually those lighter beers like that, they taste better, right?
Well, they're sweeter.
They're sweeter. They're smoother. Yeah. If I'm going to drink a 4.2 and it's going to taste like shit, I'm not drinking it. That's just my opinion.
No.
It's you know.
It's just not.
Own.
I say it's not your style. Some
it's
people,
not my style.
Some people do like this style with the lagers. You know, we're used to getting the IPAs and the milkshake IPAs. So this is a different. It's a different piece. And I think part of it too. You know, your mind is so used to those raspberry ones.
Yeah.
And you know, you knew the flavor of those. This one's something you didn't. So you're expecting raspberry. You don't necessarily get it fully because it's a lager style.
I can tell you what. I don't remember the name of it, but. That Ravens game that I don't really remember a whole lot of. I drank 11% beer that night that tasted like it was a 2% beer. Had cherry and honey flavor to it. It was amazing. That's why it went down so easy, and that's why I had so many of them. It was amazing. This is 4.2. This isn't even half of what that is.
It's flat.
And the taste is flat. To me, it tastes like it's stale.
But purple haze.
Either way, if you want some purple haze, you can. Or if you want anything from Liquor Stop, make sure you get up there. Tell them Birdland BS sent you. Get your 10% off. All right, Scott, Drew, James. You even got your Oreo hat on,
I got
man.
The jacket. I brought it all. I'm ready, dude.
I think this is why Ryan decided to sit out this week, right? Because we had a lot of Oreo stuff to talk about, and Lord knows he can't stand baseball. But anyway. It's time for some bros, bows, and o's. Before we get into too much with the Orioles, there was some sad news this week.
Yeah, so I figured we got to bring it up. He doesn't really cover the Orioles a whole lot. He's more on the national side for Masson. But Mel Antonin, you know, you guys have probably seen him on what was the one show with Tom. Used to have Tom Davis, Dave Johnson on it.
Just the Masson pregame shows.
Yeah, well, the pregame shows, but there's also the it's like Around the Horn or
I know what you're
like
talking
that.
About. It's like it's there. And
I can't get it out. I can't remember what it was, but so yeah, they haven't done it in a while. But he was on that show a lot. He was actually fighting lymphoma and a rare acute autoimmune disease. And
yeah, he had a rough couple of years there, the last couple of years.
Yeah, and unfortunately, COVID hit him.
Yeah.
And so he passed due to the complications from COVID. You know, it was a huge loss for Masson. You know, he was well-liked, well-known there on the national side and really could speak to anything. Good writer, apparently really great guy. Dan Connolly wrote a little piece on him.
Yeah.
So for the Athletic, so that was really nice and touching. So if you haven't gotten the chance to read it, go check that out. But sad news coming out of Masson, especially with Artie. The you know we joked around. We were upset about the losses of some of all the faces and names that we've heard, and now here's one that's actually a legitimate loss of life. Versus you know not just, this guy's never going to be on the air again, unfortunately. So
yeah,
thoughts are
and
with
prayers
the
with
family.
Your family and friends, man. It was tough.
Mid-Atlantic Sports Report. Yeah,
yeah, there we go.
That's
so
what it was.
One of the things I wanted to get into. And get your guys' opinion on this, was Alex Cobb.
Yep.
He gone.
About time.
He gone. We get a second baseman / outfielder utility guy. He's the number 7 ranked prospect in MLB pipeline.
So we have.
Well, he's the number 7 ranked player in Atlanta's system.
So we have 12 second basemans now, right?
Something like that at that point.
No, we have 40 shortstops.
Yeah, so he was the number 7 overall prospect in Atlanta's system, which is a good turn. I mean, you get rid of a bad contract. You get rid of a pitcher who wasn't going to be a part of the team's future. He was aging. Hadn't won a fucking game in Camden Yards at all. Zero. Like, not even one game in Camden Yards, right? We all know the contract that won't go away. We won't mention his name. But at least we got rid of one of the bad contracts. Now, granted, the Orioles did have to eat a good portion of this last year. They're going to have to pay $10 million of the $15 million. But again,
some of it's deferred, but still.
It was either you pay $15 million and you get no wins out of the guy, or you pay $10, let them pay $5, and you actually get a legit prospect back. So it essentially, you bought this prospect for $10 million is what you did. You bought a prospect for $10 million. He's a player that they say is quote-unquote major league ready right now. I don't know. I mean, he struggled at the double A level. He was the Braves single A player of the year, or no, minor league player of the year in 2017, but he was in single A at the time.
Right.
Then he gets promoted to double A and had some struggles there. He did reach the major leagues last September, went 3-for-7, had an RBI and 2Ks. So he has had a little bit of a taste of major league level. But he was a second-round pick in 2015 out of high school, so he's drafted at 17 years old from Georgia. He was an outfielder in high school. They converted him to a second baseman just because of the arm strength thing.
Right.
Played a lot of center field. He actually split time in the minor leagues between the outfield, almost dead down the middle, between the outfield and second base. So you do have a little bit of more options other than just second base out of him. So I'm happy with this. I think this was a smart move for the Orioles. Get rid of a player that wasn't adding any value to you, that wasn't part of the future, and you just so happened to get a pretty good prospect in it. I'm good with it.
I'm torn.
Oh, no.
No. And hear me out on this, right? Okay. All right. For a team that's having struggles with money, you're now paying for a guy that we don't even know if he's going to be in the major leagues next year. Right, because we're paying that $10 million to the Angels so they can cover his salary, but then the guy that we're getting back, maybe they have this idea that he is and he's going to be there next year. I don't know that as a fan yet. This is a guy that still has had struggles, still is there. Could he have future? Yes, but it's a high cost for a guy that hasn't had a lot of major league experience yet.
But my question to you is, what were you getting out of Alex Cobb? Alex Cobb hadn't won a single game in Camden Yards. He was sorely inconsistent, didn't look anything like he did his successful days in Tampa Bay. So you're going to pay $15 million.
Here's my thing. I don't like situations where I'm paying a guy to play against me. I think it is one of the dumbest things that's out there in baseball. I'm literally paying a guy. If you're trading him off to the National League,
but you don't
it's
look at
thing.
It that way. That's I think you're looking at it wrong. If you're just paying him to take him and you're not getting anything out of it, I would look at it.
But
like
it's
that.
$10 million this year. That you're paying him to not be on your team. I don't like situations like that. This is just me personally. I get everything.
But you'd rather pay $15 million for somebody who was doing nothing good.
It was a bad negotiation, if I'm being honest. I think with what Alex Cobb put out, you don't think something like we would have had to have covered either that, or I think, you know, being able to argue and say, okay, we'll cover half. But to cover 2/3 of the contract for this year, and we have to cover the deferred payments.
I think the Angels would have let us pay half, but they wouldn't have gave a shit in the turn. We wouldn't have gotten a prospect. Drew, go ahead.
Yeah, you could have gave it to him and got a player to be named later that you never see touch the club.
Right. That's been their MO recently.
Yeah, but you're getting a very good prospect better than a player to be named later.
I get your point. I'm along the lines of, like you say, you're paying – a lot of money when you're saying you don't have money here, where you're going to pay him to go away. I kind of get that.
Then why aren't we paying Chris Davis to go away?
That's a whole nother level of a contract. Anyway.
And this is 1 year.
No, when it comes to Chris Davis, and we can get it, that's going down a rabbit hole, but when it comes to Chris Davis, there's a completely different scenario than it is with Cobb.
But you're fine with paying that kind of contract just for him to walk
I
away.
I think, listen.
If
listen,
I'm paying his ass to sit on the bench, it's different than just paying his ass to play against me.
Hear me out for a second.
That could do anything for you.
Hear me out for a second, right? We've seen everything that's happened with the Orioles this offseason. We've seen them cut fat from fucking Masson, right? Some big name personalities that we've had around here for years. They're doing everything that they can to save money, right? So they looked at this, and this is just, I have no idea. This is just my opinion. They looked at this as, well, a big chunk of our salary outside of Chris Davis, our next biggest contract this year, is Alex Cobb. That's $15 million. If I can get a team to take anything for him to save us a couple million dollars, and I get a prospect out of it that could potentially help us on this rebuild, that's a win-win. Because they're looking at it as, we need to be as budget-friendly as we can. $15 million, a whole lot of fucking money. $10 million, it's a little bit less. And I can take that $5 million and then spend it on some budget players to fill in the gaps. A la the deal that they just signed with Felix Hernandez for 1 year. The king, King Felix, signed a one-year minor league contract with an invite to major league camp for $1 million on the hopes. I think the Orioles' hopes are that he can play at the level that he played at in spring training with the Braves before he got shut down, played at a good clip in the spring training last year. If he can do that for a couple of weeks, a couple of months to start this year, you paid $1 million, you turn him, you flip him to a competitor, and then you bring back more prospects.
So here's the deal. I'm not going to sit here and claim that I know the details, but that minor league, those minor league contracts, from my understanding, generally, if you are promoted to major leagues, it's now a vet minimum contract at the absolute minimum, and they can renegotiate the contract so if it's so many games.
What I heard, because they signed not only Felix Hernandez, but they also brought back Wade LeBlanc, which they signed him last year. He looked like total shit, and then he got hurt, and they shut him down. But this is the deal is, from what I've heard, Felix Hernandez is $1 million against the, you know, $1 million of salary if he makes the major league roster. Wade LeBlanc would be $700,000 if he makes the major league roster. So there's $1.7 million that you just spent on two players that you have potential to bring into your rotation staff. I don't think they're going to be much worse than what Alex Cobb was. Alex Cobb was terrible, but you just spent $1.7 million. You still save, what, another $3.3 million under what you were going to spend with Alex Cobb. And you still got a prospect out of it. So, again, when you look at the total picture of it, they saved money, they signed two players for one, and they got a minor league prospect.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. This is more of a personal thing for me of just, I hate that is allowed to go on in baseball because I think it's absolutely asinine and ridiculous. You either pay the guy or you don't. If you want him, you take him and you give up nothing, or you give up some. I don't, if you want to, I almost would have much rather them gone ahead and said, you take $10 million, or so, like we would pay $5 million. Mm-hmm. If we pay $5 million in that scenario and don't get the prospect back, are we in any worse off situation?
That helps us financially, but it doesn't help us with the rebuild. The piece that we get helps us with the rebuild, because that's what we're going through right now, right? If it was 100% a salary dump, I agree with you. They would do that.
What about the international market that we're talking, we're wanting to sign all these guys out of the international? There's still a bunch of guys that they want to sign.
Right.
This would give you money to do that. So now, inside of getting one prospect, now I can get a bunch of international guys potentially with that $10 million that I'm saving. So I guess that's my argument is, I don't like doing it, and I just think, I don't like doing it, period. But I think the way that this deal was structured, I'm just personally not a fan of. It's just me.
Go ahead,
I understand what you're saying, though.
I just want to know who Felix's agent is, because like why? You were just with the Atlanta Braves. You opted out because of COVID, and you end up with a minor league deal with the Orioles. I think you could have got a minor league deal with like Boston.
I think
he was on the downfall before that.
It's purely opportunity. He knows that if he can come in and pitch well, if he comes in and pitches well, he's got a better shot at making our roster than he has making any competitor's roster out there. And then if he pitches well, he knows that he's going to be traded to a contender, right? So his opportunity to actually make a roster is much easier here. Because when you look at the Orioles starting rotation going into this year, who the hell is even going to be on this starting rotation? You got John Means. He's the one guy that you know is going to be out there. Kramer and Keegan Aiken, and maybe Jorge Lopez. Like, but those are four guys that you have that are maybes. One is guaranteed.
He could definitely make the Royals. He could definitely make the Rangers.
Maybe. Maybe. I'm just saying, who said that they were ready to kick the tires on him?
I'm just saying, like, because they just spend ridiculous money. But second off, this year, if Chris Davis is coming in, I wouldn't mind saying, hey, Chris, put the bat down. You're going to the bullpen and working on some pitching this year. Get some money out of him. Maybe he can strike some people out.
Well, let's look at this Felix Hernandez thing a little bit more, right? I
Chuck
wonder,
says, can we sign Bartolo Colon?
I'd love to see Bartolo Colon.
Why not?
I'd be for it. What is he, 45 at this point? I don't even care. I'd love to see him here just because he can eat up innings.
And, only if he's hitting.
Only if he's hitting, right. But, again, let's look at this Felix Hernandez
thing. Drew's giving me, like, the dirtiest eyes over there.
I'm still squinting from my headache. You're good.
I know Felix Hernandez is not the pitcher that he once was. He's not the dominant, you know, Cy Young Award winner, the constant low, like, 3-2 ERA pitcher. He's not that guy anymore. He had Hall of Fame numbers through 2016. I think the problem with Felix Hernandez was he just got overworked for years. He pitched too many innings and then just hit a wall. And because there was a significant drop in production. He went from being wins and losses you could never judge him on because he played in Seattle. But if you just looked at his strikeouts, you looked at his ERA, you looked at his whip, all that stuff was great for a long time. And then all of a sudden, pew, fell off a fucking cliff. Yep. Usually you see that after some sort of major injury or something like
Sometimes
that.
Sometimes it's just tired arm.
And I think that's the case with him. I think it's a tired arm. I think it's overuse.
Did he have Tommy John?
Mm-mm. I don't think so.
I don't think he had Tommy John.
I don't think so. I'll have to look that up. I don't think he did. But
he did.
Here's the thing. He did look good, again, in Atlanta's spring training camp last year. He had a 1.98 ERA in 4 starts, covering 13.2 innings. I know it's a very, very small sample size. I get that.
Chris Davis looked good in spring training last year,
too. He did. He did. I get that. But I think this is just, again, it's one of those really, really low-risk, high-reward type things. Because, again, if he can come in here, figure out a way to put it together, keep somewhere around like a 4-run ERA in a bandbox stadium like Camden Yards, I think there might be a competitive team out there that says, hey, we're making a playoff run. We need our 4th or 5th starter. He's looked good in Baltimore. We'll give up some of our lower tier prospects. And I think that's best case scenario out of this whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, look, I get that it's a low risk, high potential reward for us. You're literally doing this in the hopes that you can trade him later.
That's what I'm saying. This is the whole reason for this.
This is not a piece that you're taking and going, all right, here's the piece that gets us to the next level. It's not going to happen.
No. This is a Wade LeBlanc, Tommy Malone, I think is his name.
Tommy Malone, yeah.
Yeah, last year. And we got prospects for Malone last year, right? That's what this is all about.
I think the thing with him, too, is that you know, it brings in another veteran status there, right? That's had success. Wade LeBlanc hasn't exactly had the most success in the world. I mean, he's been successful, but he hasn't been the source of success.
That brings up a great point that I wanted to ask you and Drew specifically about, right? So the Felix Hernandez thing, I almost get because, again, you just don't know what you're getting out of him. You might be able to salvage a half a season out of him and get some prospects back, right? Wade LeBlanc sucked last year. He was terrible. Yeah. You saw nothing good there, right? So I think they're hoping that he'll pull it together and they can get something for him. But there comes a point where, like, is the risk with that worth it? Or are you stunting the growth of some of these potential prospects and blocking them from getting an opportunity?
So, yes, he sucked last year in, the 6 starts. He had, an 8 ERA. It was horrible. But it was also, you know, cut a little bit short. His season was cut a little bit short. He didn't have as many starts as we would have liked him to have had.
Of course, but he was terrible.
Right. Is that because the injury was already there? The injury was already prevalent. And that's what they're taking a flyer saying, all right, now that you've recovered, we're going to give you a low-ass deal. Here's your shot. If it doesn't work, they're out $700,000. Would I have liked them to not be signed to a contract, just give him the invite and see how he looks? Yeah. But they're hoping that they see what in him what they saw when they originally traded or when they originally got him and originally signed him was that he's a guy that can give you innings.
Right.
If he can come back and show you that he's recovered from the injury last year and that he's he can get the ball over the damn strike zone on a regular basis and eat up some innings for you. He's not going to win a ton of games, but he's going to be, he could be, who knows, maybe they turn him into a long middleman.
But my question is, right, like last year, if he doesn't get hurt, do we see Dean Kramer, right? Do we see Dean Kramer as early as we did? And he worked out great. Like, he pitched very, very well.
Yeah.
If Tommy Malone doesn't pitch well and get traded, do we see Keegan Aiken or Jorge Lopez? Both of those guys came in and pitched well.
Do you see any of those guys as early as we did if COVID doesn't happen last year?
Yeah, COVID's another factor.
I know, I'm saying that plays a role into what's happening.
My point is, though, you've got another guy in the wings. You've got a bunch of young pitchers. Now, some of the top pitchers, the Grayson Rodriguez, the DL Halls, I still think they're a year away, or maybe they're late this year before you see them. But a guy that, like, we haven't seen anything yet. He's like 27 or 28 years old at this point. Michael Ballman has pitched great at the minor league level, hasn't gotten an opportunity here. Why are we not leaving a roster spot open for somebody like him to come up and get a chance in the rotation? You need to start evaluating these guys at the major league level to know that if your draft plan and your development plan is working.
So he's been working out of what, Double A, right? So I think
he saw Triple A last year. Well, actually, no. Well, I'm sorry, because of the camp, right? He was at the
Double
A camp. So
I think this is the year, right? They did like what they were seeing out of him at their little camp sessions that they were doing. Mm-hmm. So I think this is the year that maybe he does get a spring training invite. Maybe it's, let's see what you can do against some little bit more solid bats. He'll be a late inning guy going against guys that are fighting for a spot on other teams, right? So you see this kid's drive. What does he do at that level, and go from there? I don't know, with him doing well, right? We talk about not wanting to rush guys. He's doing well, but if he's never truly been able to see that Triple A, or as we call it, 4A for us, is what it sometimes feels like, is it's the 4A bus going back and forth. If he gets to that level and starts to struggle, we could have had rushed him too early if you're bringing him up now. So I think you see what he does. I don't think he will. I think you see what he does in spring training, and then you make your decision from there.
In my opinion, this is just my opinion, I think Double A is a very good assessment of one's talent and readiness for the major league level. I think Triple A, in my opinion, is where you send people back to when they struggle at the major league level. I've always thought that, like, that whole, well, low A, high A, single A, double A, triple A, then major things. The talent level at the Double A level is very good. And that if you can prove to be successful there, the leap from Double A to the major league level isn't much different than from Triple A to the major league level.
I don't disagree. I think the thought process for some people, and myself included, of why AAA can be so important is because there are a lot of guys in AAA that have had major league experience.
I agree with that.
And up and down. And so sometimes for some guys, if a guy maybe lacks a little bit of confidence, things like that, sending him to AAA first helps promote that confidence of, you can compete against this at this level against guys who have been to that level and been up and down and up and down. So if you're able to compete against them and you're able to make them look bad, so to speak, right, from a pitching standpoint, then I think it shows you confidence in yourself and shows the team you truly are. That's what AAA, when it was originally created for all these levels, that's what AAA was designed to be. It was designed to be that last step to make sure a guy could handle guys that, it's a faster paced game, right? It's the bigger names that you might have coming up and down, guys that have the experience.
Drew, what's your take on the whole thing?
I mean, I you're right to an extent, but then once you kind of had a lot of the franchises that had, like, hell, even, I don't know, maybe it might change because, like, you're kind of contracting the minor leagues, but you had some organizations that even had three single A teams. So, like, I kind of think that evolved differently, whereas the teams that towards the top, like the Dodgers and Yankees, these teams that you know that spend money,
right?
That's when the AAA was actually even more important to them than any of the other single A or Double A, because it was like, look, you could be in the majors, but I just paid like five guys $20 million. You don't have a spot,
right?
I think, and I still think with a team like the Orioles, I hate to keep bringing up COVID, but I think that really did kind of hinder the process a little bit, because you're seeing, like, you didn't have these guys playing a regular schedule.
Yeah.
Playing in a 3-4-5 game series in double A, having to travel up and down the East Coast. Like, they, I mean, yeah, like, you've heard, a pretty decent amount of good news coming out of that little buoy camp from Orioles, like a Gunnar Henderson, like, yeah, those types. Yeah. Like, right. You heard a lot of good news, but it would have been like, what if you were hearing a lot of that great stuff like a Gunnar Henderson and he was beating up other teams' guys,
right,
that are on that same level, that, you know, all you heard, that guy's got a great prospect. Well, he was beating up those guys' prospects.
When you're talking, and that's, I guess, where my point is, right? There are only so many first-round picks every year.
Yeah.
Those are the guys that can make that leap and should be making that leap from double A to triple A. It's the guys that were, you get in the later rounds, the guys that you're picking up and drafting them, you know, out of some of these community colleges and things like that, or playing well, and you're giving them, you're basically kind of taking a flyer on. Those are the guys that need to go through that triple A experience. Unfortunately, MLB, for some teams, including the Orioles, I think the Orioles are one of the worst at it, and that's why I'm curious to see where this rebuild goes. We don't have the talent at the major league level to create the backlog of good talent at the triple A level to then allow these guys go into that triple A level and say, what can you do against this top tier talent?
That's because the heart of our talent is at this low, is at the single A and double A levels right now. They're still developing.
Right.
Like I said, you get a scraggler like Michael Ballman, who's been in the system a little bit longer, who is a little bit ahead of the DL Halls. There's a little bit ahead of the Grayson Rodriguez. There's a little bit ahead of the Adley Rutschmans. He's ahead of these guys because of the experience. I think he's been in the minor leagues. I'd say he's 27 or 28 years old at this point.
He's 27, yeah.
So you, at some point, you got to evaluate what you have for him, with him. And, I mean, when you look at this rotation, like we talked about, John Means is the only piece in there that we know for sure. More than likely, Keegan Aiken and Dean Kramer will be in there. So there's three pitchers. Jorge Lopez looked decent last year. Right. He might be four. There's a lot of question marks. Who's going to be the five? Could it be Felix? Could it be, you know, Wade LeBlanc? Who knows? But I just think that at some point, you got to see what you have in Michael Ballman.
Yeah.
Last thing I want to talk about with the Orioles, and I got to bring this up because I saw it on Twitter and I thought, oh man, this is like sacrilegious. Like, why are we even fucking talking about this? There were talks about the Orioles having potential interest in trading away Trey Mancini. Okay. I wanted to get your guys' opinions on this. Like, this is a kid, this, you know, obviously coming back from a lot, and we've been big supporters of his as a fan base, as a community. He's been a big supporter of the community, and he's done everything right as an Oriole, right? He's everything that you want in a player. But, you know, is it, would you, should we, I don't know. Should we even be thinking about this? Trading Trey Mancini?
So, I don't want to, like, here's the thing. I've said before, and I've said it already on the show, the piece about you never know how a guy's going to come back.
Yeah. Said it earlier today.
Yeah. Trey Mancini has gone through a lot.
Yeah.
And we know that. But he also looks good, looks healthy. This is a guy that, from a community perspective, he's a guy that you could build an organization around, right? He's going to be well involved in the community, already is. He's, you know, he's shown that he's been able to make evolutions in his game to bring him to the level that he's at. You know, the thing that scares me is what just happened with him, with the arbitration situation.
Yeah.
Where they're deferring.
Oh, can we defer your money?
Right. Where we're deferring payments. So.
Trying to.
I don't know that it's completely out of the realm of possibility. Is it sacrilegious? I think so.
Yeah. I mean, everything that this guy's been through, and as an organization, you've been supportive of his. You've done all the right things outside of this deferment of money with him and Anthony Santander. That was kind of a, like, where the fuck did that come from? I didn't realize money was that bad. Damn, they're trying to defer money exactly, like they're the fucking state. Do I think Trey Mancini is a part of this team's future as far as part of the rebuild process? Probably not. By the time that the Orioles are actually ready to compete again, he'll be in his, I would say, like
32, 33.
Like mid-30s, kind of, you know, exiting his prime at that point. And, like, to your point, we don't know how he's going to come back from all of this. He's been through a lot.
It's a risk, too, with leukemia coming. All that stuff, leukemia comes back, unfortunately.
It's very taxing on the body now. He's a professional athlete, right? He takes care of himself. He's made enough money that he's got to – yeah, right, exactly. So, and he lives a good lifestyle from what you see, you know, on
Twitter.
Him
and Sarah Berman, yeah.
Right. I don't know. If I would not be trading him for the sake of trading him. I'm not trading him like I just traded Alex Cobb. If the if a team came at me with the right set of prospects that I felt could be a major impact, I'm listening. But it's going to take
A lot.
It's going to take a good chunk, and it should to take him away from us.
Yeah, and
in my opinion,
that's the thing. And, you know, we could be looking at this. You know, we're looking at it from the community standpoint, what he's done, and also what he's done on the field, and what we've been so proud of him doing. You know, he's somewhat of a local guy too, right?
Right.
So he has the local ties. You know, this is also a guy, he tugs at our heartstrings. This is a guy with Mo, right?
Yeah.
The connection that he had with Mo is undeniable, especially after he was diagnosed with the leukemia. So I sit back and say, it is sacrilegious to me as a fan, as a business person. I don't know where his value stands, but to your point, I can't say nothing's off the table. I'm listening.
Real quick, Drew.
So I think the sacrilege part is asking to defer the money. I don't think the sacrilege part is exploring options and trading, Trey. Like we say, you're not going to be keep competing next year. And I don't mean to sound like a dick, but with the cancer thing, you lost a year of seeing what you really do. I mean, look, he was riding high, but you don't know how he can rebound off of this life-altering situation.
Like Fred said, it's taxing on the body.
And COVID isn't gone. It's not. Right. COVID's not gone. So do you go through all season thinking, he might go away for a month to just, numbers spiked and they got, do you go through all that too? I really don't want to sound like a dick about it, but if you told me that he could perform well, and in July, you got a team's two prospects in the team's top 10, and then another player to be named later. Take it.
No, I think where we're saying from a sacrilege standpoint is it's sacrilegious as a fan. That's where I think sacrilege mentality comes in.
I mean, right. You don't want to see a guy that seems so nice, and it looks like you're just, you know what I mean? He's gone through everything to get to this point. You're just throwing him aside. You don't want to look like that.
To Alex's point on Facebook, he says, Trey has actually wanted to stay during these fucked up season. I'd keep him. Everyone else big wanted out. I agree with that. Chuck says, place Adam Jones in Mancini's situation when Jones was where Mancini was in his career right now. Would we have entertained training him? I see Mancini as almost filling the Adam Jones role to the O's right now. It wouldn't be right. And I agree with that. Like I said, if you're looking at from a leadership standpoint, what he means to the locker room, what he means to the clubhouse, all of those things, and even what his performance was on the field prior to, having to go out with everything, 100% you keep Trey. This isn't, again, I'm not on the bandwagon of saying we need to get rid of Trey. I'm saying that if a team comes to us and blows us away with an offer, I'm listening. But again, I'm listening. I'm not making that deal unless I know for sure it's going to benefit us long term.
Go ahead, James, real quick.
They had movies for that about, sad story, happy story, all that, Trey Mancini for that. But if we get the right call, get the right things, you got to ship him out because here he's our number one player. Somewhere else, he's probably top five on their team. He's not that good of a player.
He's a very good player on a bad team.
Yeah, he looks good, but he could somewhere else. He's not going to be a superstar.
But he's the type of guy that he could be a guy that is that one piece for somebody
I love the guy. He's great for the community and all that. But it's at the end of the day, it's a business. It sucks when players go, but that's why they put new jerseys on the back of your shirt. That's why I have my own name on the back of my jerseys because they come and go, just like ex girlfriends. So. Yeah.
No rules, no boundaries, two topics, 30 seconds each. It's time for the two
minute warning.
You're coming over to the dark side, are you?
You can tell I was never a gang member. I was never throwing up gang signs.
It's the beer.
That was the whitest gang sign I've ever seen. Terrible. All right, man. It's time for the two-minute warning. James, what do you got for the first question?
You can go first this week.
Me? Okay.
It's simple. Keeping it with the Orioles. Thank God baseball's coming around. I love it. Give me one player you would have loved to have seen in an Orioles uniform.
A good question, and I'll stick with all of these like veteran players that come to Baltimore and just die. One player that came to Baltimore and actually played decently, bat like 290 when he was here, was Vladimir Guerrero. Vladimir Guerrero was my favorite player growing up, like outside of Cal Ripken, that didn't play for the Orioles. I would have loved to have seen Vladimir Guerrero here in his heyday when he was hitting 330 and hitting balls out of the dirt, hitting 30 home runs, stealing bases, doing everything, throwing balls from the, you know, lasers from the outfield. I would have loved to see Vlad Guerrero in his heyday.
I'll give you my top two because I've thought about this. Number one, hands down, Ken Griffey Jr. I would have loved to see. I mean, look at what I would have loved to seen him have more shots at the warehouse.
Dude, that's where that was going too.
Like, I would have loved to have seen it. Does anybody in this room actually disagree with what I'm saying?
No, I don't.
I didn't think so. The other guy, a little bit more of a throwback, Kirby Puckett.
I love Kirby.
I love the enthusiasm he brought in Minnesota. Would have loved to have seen it here.
All right, go ahead, Drew.
All right, so you got the news of the NCAA college football game coming back.
Yeah,
sports, pretty cool. So it's the, you know, should college athletes be paid? And then if so, how? How would you go about distributing?
Man, I feel like they should be paid for their likeness. So anything that they're going to use their name, I do think that they should be paid. They should have been paid for a while now. You know, if you want to go and have autograph sessions and get paid to do autograph sessions, if you want to get jersey sales and that kind of thing, I think that you should be able to get jersey sales. I don't think they should be paid by the universities, but I do think that they should be paid for their likeness.
Yeah, I think when the NCAA is using their likeness, the commercials, you know, all we see the commercials all the time, College Game Day with ESPN, and they're using all these guys' likeness to promote all this stuff, to promoting the game, each game for the big game. Oh, we've got Trevor Lawrence in this game. He should be being paid for that. You are absolutely using his likeness. And now you're putting out a video game, something that's out there and going to be out there and updating constantly. Yes, these guys should be paid. It's got to come from the NCAA. It can't come from the colleges.
All right, Scott. Good show, man. Sign us out of here.
Well, we appreciate you guys tuning in each and every week.
Stay tuned for the after hours.
Stay tuned for the after hours. Last call for alcohol. Make sure you also check out our website, www.birdlandbs.com. While you're there, you can check out all of our episodes. You can check out the Shell and Tell podcast. I know Ryan just put out his Ryan Rant episode.
Episode one.
I think it's like 30-minute episode. It got through 15 minutes before we had to start getting ready for the show. It was actually pretty good.
Amateur ass recorded himself on the laptop microphone.
He had some good comments. I could go at him on a few things, but it was a good episode.
He did with it.
Make sure you go check that out. Obviously, check us out on Big Play and BirdlandSports.com as well. Make sure you obviously always check us out on our social media pages. I know that Craig has been hitting us up. You guys have probably seen it. Continue to do that. Tag us, put it on our page at BirdlandBS is how you find us. We'll bring it up in the social media segment. Make sure you also, while you're there, like, follow, subscribe, wherever it may be. Check us out on the YouTube. If you're more into YouTube or you want to check that out, go do that. Make sure you always check out the audio version of the podcast, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, wherever you listen to your podcasts, we are there. And if we're not there, let us know. We'll find a way to get there. Make sure you go check it out. As always, we'll see you guys next Tuesday.
Four days
Thursday,
from now.
Next Tuesday, 7:45 Eastern Standard Time for Fred, James, Drew, Terps BS Bird, who isn't here tonight, and myself. We'll see you guys.
See ya.